I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
Yeah. Okay, Megan, so there was another Amplify Our Voices on Instagram Live earlier this week. Bravo TV hosted it, featuring Chef Gregory Gourdet of Top Chef, for all of our Top Chef fans out there. And what I was really excited about is new Real Housewife of Potomac, Dr. Wendy Osefo. This is our first time really getting a chance to meet her.
Amazing.
So we will have the audio from that Instagram Live in a bonus episode that comes out tomorrow on Sunday, so you guys can take a listen. But it was really fantastic. Love hearing from all of these people. And I love that Bravo is doing this every Monday in June.
Also, tomorrow's Father's Day. So happy Father's Day to all the dads out there.
All the dads out there, especially our house husbands, which I'm going to give a special shout out to Joe Gorga for Father's Day this year, because I don't know if you saw Megan, but I think you need to check out his Instagram. He posted a picture earlier this week where he was laying out in the sun and he looked, you know, all greased up and fantastic, but there was a conveniently placed cactus in the background. So anyone who's seen it will know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, go check out his Instagram.
Speaking of Joe's from Real Housewives of New Jersey, did you see the photo that Joe GDJ posted of Gabriella? And it's like,
oh no.
He's kind of shown himself to not be so Instagram savvy, and this photo is another example of that, in that it's clearly like a photo of Gabriella, but he's decided to zoom in on her, so it's like insanely pixelated to the point that people are commenting like, who is this?
Wait, I'm looking at it now, and the hashtags are determined, hashtag love you. I also love when parents really misuse hashtags and just like use them to enhance their captions.
Right.
Oh my God. Shout out to all the dads out there who are trying to post on Instagram and don't know what they're doing.
Exactly. And you know, happy Father's Day to my dad.
And mine too.
Yeah.
And I'm a plant dad, so that's something, right?
Oh my God, a plant daddy.
A plant daddy. Plus, don't forget, you guys can listen to us on Spotify. I know a lot of you probably listen on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, but Spotify is one of my faves, so check us out there.
Okay, what are we talking about today?
Well, unfortunately, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and Real Housewives of New York City are dark for a couple weeks, so we will not have recaps of those, but they are still airing some specials where you can basically watch along with the cast, so that's something. But today we're going to talk Married to Medicine LA and Below Deck Med, because this season is getting better and better.
Yes. Plus, I got a chance to sit down with Gisele Bryant from the Real Housewives of Potomac, so that interview will be later on in this episode.
Let's get into it. Married to Medicine LA, we have some of the ladies out and about in New Orleans, and the rest of them back home living their lives.
Right, because it was just the Xavier alums who were on this trip.
Yes, and I have to say that, you know, I loved my time in college. I had a lot of fun. We partied a lot. Every college has their own kind of culture. But let me tell you that Xavier University and the way that they celebrate their homecoming, like, I wish we had just a fraction of that at my school.
Oh, did you not?
Well, you know, we were not really a big sports school. You know, Ithaca was much more communications, theater. We were a little bit more known for that kind of stuff as opposed to our like sports teams. We did have one big football game every year where we played against our competitors, Cortland, and it was called Cortica Jug. And it was like, everyone just used it as an excuse to party and get wasted. And I don't think anyone actually cared about the outcome of the game. But other than that, like, there wasn't really a huge culture. We didn't really have Greek life, which I've talked about before. So I don't know, there was just an energy in the air at this celebration. And I guess, you know, being in Louisiana, being in New Orleans, there is a certain vibe, but we definitely didn't have it to that degree.
Well, I just think it must be insane to go to college in New Orleans, because I feel like what kept me from getting alcohol poisoning on the reg is that Texas has very strict alcohol rules. Like, you can't, you know, buy liquor on Sundays, and the, you know, the bars close pretty early, and definitely no open containers. So
right.
I think that it's good I went to school in Texas, but I feel like New Orleans would have been amazing.
That's so true. Like, there are no rules. The rules are, there are no rules.
Exactly.
Well, also, you know, they pop into Cafe Du Monde at the end of the episode. And as a big fan of New Orleans, my friend for my birthday sent me this like care package that includes beignet mix, which I'm so excited about, but I also do not trust myself to put them together the way I know they must at the actual location. So I have the mix. I have not ventured into the kitchen to prepare it or do any of that yet because I'm scared.
Yeah, spoiler alert, they're not going to be as good, but you can try, you know.
I have plenty of powdered sugar, so no matter how they come out, I'm just going to load them up with that
and yeah.
go from there.
Okay, so speaking of beignets and just like delicious food in general, I need to talk to someone about Jasmine.
Oh my goodness. Okay, yes.
We know she's helping Dr. Kendra get herself healthy again. She wants to lose some weight. She wants to get back into fitness. And that's great. And that seems healthy. But then it's like the way Jasmine is with her own diet, it's so over the top. Like, she goes to get gelato with Imani and brings out her own special little, it's like the little paper cups you put, a doctor would put pills in, you know, like whenever you see a movie and it's like the nurse is coming down the hallway with the pills. They're always in this little paper cup. That's what she wanted her ice cream in.
I'm on a diet.
Yeah.
So this is actually, I'm just going to have this. Like, that's all I want.
I know. So that part, I was like, okay, this is over the top. Then when she took out the thing to test her blood sugar, that's when I started to get worried about, okay, this might have gone one step too far in terms of being obsessed with what you're eating and how you look and all of that. Like, now I'm a little bit concerned.
Because to be clear, she's not diabetic. So she's not testing her blood for any other purpose than she said. I think she said like she always wants to be in fat burning mode or something.
Right.
It just is a lot.
It just is a lot, and I feel like there's a level of stress that you're adding to your life that seems a bit unnecessary. You know, it's one thing to watch, for example, Teresa on Real Housewives of New Jersey do a fitness competition, and she was so committed, so dedicated. She wasn't drinking. She brought her own food to restaurants. Like, she was all in on that, but there was a time limit on it. It was for a competition. There was a goal in mind. And yes, you would like to think that after something like that, you could maintain a healthy lifestyle and maintain a healthy diet. But, you know, Teresa also did not take that with her further on. Like, right now, and I know Jasmine has done fitness competitions in the past, but I'm like, if this is just your everyday life, this seems like you're doing a little too much.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't relate, that's for sure. I don't.
Right.
I fully want all of the gelato all the time.
Right. I want, like, at least if you're trying to portion it out, at least get like a kid's size. You know, there's always a kid size, small, medium, large. Like, large, too much. Medium, all right, on a certain day. Small, you're like, kid size, it's like.
And look, I will say, this is the hard part about dieting in general, is like, I never want to be the not fun person, because how not fun is it to get ice cream with someone who isn't going to eat but like half a teaspoon? That's not fun enough.
She had like a doll size version. She even used a taster spoon as her actual spoon.
Oh, God. No.
Too much. I'm a little worried. But I think she's doing okay. I don't know. Hang in there, Jasmine. I want to talk a little bit about Shanique, because in my interview with her last week, we talked about this presentation that she put together and shared with Dr. Robert, who I think we saw smile for the first time after Shanique's presentation, which was well received. And he was really excited for her and proud of her for putting something like that together. But have you ever had to put together a presentation in your personal life to try to convince someone of something?
It's okay. So no, but I just had a memory. In middle school, I remember Titanic came out and was obviously all the rage. Everyone had Titanic posters up in their bedroom. Every girl was masturbating to Leonardo DiCaprio.
And every young gay boy.
Yes, right. I'm so sorry. Yes, of course. And I remember my best friend grew up in a really conservative religious home, and her parents wouldn't let her see it because it was PG-13 and there were breasts exposed in the film.
There were boobs.
I don't even know if you remember that, Eric. I don't even know if you were paying attention.
Oh, I recall. Okay. Oh, yes. I mean, that was, yeah, that was even as a gay boy, you're still like, oh my God, boobs, you know?
So her parents, like, she was begging her parents, please let me watch it. Everyone watches it. I want to see this movie that everyone's talking about. And her parents said, if you really want to, you need to write us an essay on why we should let you see it.
Oh my God.
So she eventually did get to see the boobs and, you know.
I think you need to ask this friend for a copy of this essay, and we need to do a live reading of it, because that sounds incredible.
Doesn't it? Amazing.
I mean, when I talked to Shanique about this presentation, I was like, you know what? It's really not a bad idea, because the way she explained it in the interview, you guys will remember that she's very much like a visual person. She needs things written down, because if she's just left to her own devices to try to explain it, she'll forget certain points, you know, and I think that makes sense to structure it and organize it in a way to be like, here's what I think, pros and cons. I mean, we do this kind of stuff a lot in our office, you know, for different things that we have to do. We're always putting together different presentations to pass along to people to like present information and whatever. But I do kind of feel like I want to incorporate it more into my personal life, you know, and just when I need to convince Danny of something.
Right. So it's more so that you want to put together a presentation to convince Danny, not make him put together a presentation to convince you.
Right, exactly. Which I'm not opposed to that, but I'm happy to be the one to put it together because I am stubborn and like to get my own way, which he'll tell you without question.
Tell me something that you think you might need to put together a presentation for.
Well, funny enough, over the weekend, we were trying to plan what to do for his birthday. And he wanted to go to Asbury Park, New Jersey. And I was like, not really. I've never been. I don't know much about it. It is like a very prominent gay scene or whatever. So maybe actually this would be an opportunity for like him to put together a presentation of like, this is why I think we should go to Asbury Park. So I guess actually role reversal on that one. So I'll see what he thinks about putting together a presentation. He just got furloughed, so he has time.
Yeah. Oh, no, again?
Yes, again, for the second time.
Oh, Danny. I'm sorry.
I know. It's fine.
All right. I was hoping more it'd be some sort of like lewd sex act that you were trying to talk him into, but that's fine too.
Well, I have to do some research before that.
You're like, what haven't we done?
Right. I want to talk a little bit about Dr. Imani, and not necessarily what we find out at the end of this episode is happening between her and her husband, but the conversation that she was having around mental health, which I think, you know, is still so important that that's highlighted, but just the way she speaks on it, obviously she's a pro, but I thought she just explained it in such a perfect way in this episode, and I've never heard someone be so eloquent about mental health and how you might not always know a person is suffering just because of what they present on the outside versus what they feel on the inside.
A lot of things that I've heard from patients are, it's a white people problem, but mental health and mental illness doesn't have a face.
I think it is also interesting, like, I don't think I consciously think of it, but when you hear that someone's a doctor, I think you do assume that they have their life together, you know, in a certain respect. And the fact that a psychiatrist needs a psychiatrist of their own, you know, of course that makes sense. It's just, you know, mental health is for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And she says mental health and mental illness doesn't have a face. And it reminded me a bit of what we've learned about Stephanie Holman from Real Housewives of Dallas over the years, that, you know, people don't often look at her. And she said this before in her interviews, like, people don't look at her and think, oh, she must be depressed. Like, she, you know, has this life. She has this kid. She has this beautiful house, you know. But there is no face for mental illness. It affects everybody and everybody differently. And that's so important to speak on. I feel like maybe we should get a panel together with, like, Dr. Imani, Stephanie Holman, like, who else? A few other Bravo celebrities, like, and have a conversation about it.
I like that idea.
I'm going to produce it. We also learned a bit about Leah in this episode, which we really haven't gotten a lot of background on her.
Okay, I found that very interesting because, first of all, Kendra makes a great point that, like, just because a young woman isn't having sex doesn't mean she shouldn't be going to the gynecologist. Like, And it's so true. Like, I remember a doctor was the first person I was able to have a candid conversation with about, like, my, like, what was happening in my personal sex life, because
right,
it's just nice that you have that protected relationship with the doctor where they can't tell your parents. You can be honest, and then they can, like, answer your questions about health.
Well, exactly. And it's like Leah says, not everybody grows up in a home where that stuff is talked about openly. If there's, you know, religious beliefs or any kind of conservative beliefs that might impact the ability for a parent to have that conversation with a child, then where else are they going to learn it from if it's not like YouTube or the internet? Or, you know, you need that relationship with a doctor. I just couldn't believe that Leah's daughter was okay having this conversation on camera.
Oh, I know. Let me tell you, I think she really started regretting it when Kendra said vaginal discharge.
Yeah, those are two words you just don't want to hear put together when you're 15.
Yeah. No, even as an adult, like.
Yeah, even now, like, it's not great sounding together. But yeah, I was just sitting there and, you know, I kind of always break the fourth wall when I'm watching these scenes and I just can't help it. But I'm just thinking like, oh my God, there's Kendra in this room. There's this little girl whose mom just had to walk out. And then there's probably at least two other people, like the camera guy, maybe a producer is in there. I'm just like, oh, this poor girl. Of course she's not going to.
I know.
Of course she's not actually going to say anything. Like, I hope she did have a private session with Dr. Kendra after, because you know that she's not going to be like, oh yeah, I'm sexually active. Like, she... her mom would see it later on anyway.
Right. And, you know, not that she is, but it's also like, I don't know. Good for her, though, for letting other people see that conversation. You know, other people her age, even. Like,
yeah,
she took one for the team.
How old were you when you first kissed a boy?
Sixth grade, I think, was my first real, like, kiss.
Is that what, like 12, 13? That's like, how old are you? And I don't even know.
It's, I think... 12.
I think that's there.
I remember, yeah, I think, or maybe 11.
Because see, like, when you're a gay person, you have a first kiss. Well, not always. I shouldn't generalize, but I had a first kiss with a girl, and then I had a first kiss with a boy.
So what age for each?
So interestingly enough, my first interaction with a boy didn't involve kissing. So there's that.
That is so Eric.
But I think when I kissed a girl, I'll never forget her first name. Her name was Vicky Tibbert. She was my first kiss. And I feel like I was...
Tibbert,
I think. Vicky Tibbert.
Oh, okay.
Victoria Tibbert, if you're out there listening, it was you. And I don't remember. I feel like I was maybe like 13, 12 or 13, I would guess. And it was just like a peck, like a really, like, I needed to get it over with, you know? And then the boy came later on, like 15, 16.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. Walk down memory lane. Well, in the last, you know, 30 seconds or so of this episode, we find out from Dr. Imani something that I didn't necessarily suspect was coming all along, but that she and Phil are going to be getting a divorce.
I'm not going to beg anybody, including my husband, to spend time with me. Like, either you want to because you're in love with me or you don't. I can't keep putting up, you know, fronts and facades all the time. So I'm the one who initiated all of this. Like, I was like, yo, I want to get a divorce.
I mean, that really doesn't surprise me. I just feel like she's sort of been hinting at that she's not happy with their arrangement as is, you know, like it's not fulfilling to her. So I get it. And I think it's probably best too.
Yeah. I like that she had the awareness of self to be like, if he's not prioritizing me, I'm not going to stand here and beg someone to come and spend time with me, especially someone I am married to. I was like, damn. I was like, yes, stand up for yourself, you know, because that might not always happen. So
yeah,
I think in these next couple of episodes, we'll learn a lot more, and she's going to eventually, I think, tell the rest of the ladies about it. I'm interested to know how Jasmine, Shanique, you know, they react, because I love them both, but they have speculated a bit over the course of this season, like what's going on with these two, you know. But I think when Imani tells them, there's going to be this just outpouring of support, because I think at the end of the day, these ladies, it is a sisterhood and they do have each other's backs when it comes to those real big life things.
So I got a chance to interview one of your favorite people, Gisele Bryant from Real Housewives of Potomac.
Yes.
We talked about how her daughters are really following in the footsteps of her and their father, Jamal, in terms of their activism. She told me all about new wife Wendy and just in general gave me some good sneak peeks about this season. Here's that interview.
You know those mornings when you feel like you just can't get it right?
Overslept, caught in traffic, coffee spilled on your crisp white shirt. It can be hard out there.
But you know what'll transform your morning? Dave's Killer Bread. Dave's hearty lineup of morning makers, organic bread, bagels, and English muffins are here to revive your day and fix all the things. And it tastes real good.
Never skip on DKB, a guaranteed fresh start. Visit daveskillerbread.com to learn more and look for Dave's Killer Bread in the bread aisle of your local grocery store.
Welcome to the podcast via a phone call. Hello, Gisele Bryant.
Hello.
How is it doing press these days in a time of quarantine?
It's funny because I'm used to all this glam and it's left to my own devices. And sometimes I get it right and sometimes I don't. It's been interesting, but I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. How often are you putting on makeup these days?
It depends. Maybe like 4 times a week.
Okay. I feel like that's still a pretty good amount.
Is that a lot?
Yeah.
Well, now I am. Like in the beginning of the quarantine, it was like not at all. For like weeks, I had on no makeup and I was very, very happy about it. You know, gave my skin a time to breathe.
Yeah, I'm currently sitting with no pants on and haven't even showered today. So I commend you for your effort.
Nice. I love it.
So I know that recently you participated in Bravo's Instagram Live conversation, Amplify Our Voices. I want to know, how important is it to you right now to be using your platform to discuss issues like racial equality and social justice?
It's huge. And it has actually made me, I've always appreciated my platform and appreciated the fact that I do have the ability to touch a lot of people with my social media and, you know, thankful for Bravo for that. But now with everything that's been happening, I so much more appreciate it because right now our voices really need to be heard and understood. And, you know, if I didn't have this platform, it would be a little bit more difficult. I've talked about the fact that my daughters were adamant that we went to a protest and when we got home, they were mad at me because I didn't get on the microphone and give a speech. And I was like, what? Like, you know, they understand my platform and they want me to use my platform as much as I do for this subject. I mean, they really want me to explain to everyone about injustice and inequality and, you know, what we need to do and the tools that we need in order to make our future just equal. You know, that's all we're asking for. We just want to be treated equally and not be in fear of the police. I mean, I should never feel like when I see a cop car coming down the street, I should never feel like, uh-oh, something bad's going to happen. So yes, this platform is very important right now.
God, you must be so proud of them for them to understand the importance right now of you using your platform.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, my kids are amazing. My kids get it. You know, my oldest is 15. My twins are 14. I'm their mom. Their dad is their dad. And, you know, he and I have been working. We met at the NAACP. And, you know, obviously that's a civil rights organization. So these conversations of racial inequality are not foreign to them. You know, these are conversations that we have with them on a regular basis at the dinner table. So they get it and they are clear when we all watch. And by the way, I'm unable and still to this day to watch the entire 8 minutes, almost 9 minutes of seeing George Floyd murdered. I'm unable to watch it because it just is sickening to me. I've watched the majority of it and then I'm like, okay, I can't. Because it makes me almost want to cry. I want to throw up. I want to, you know, it invokes so many emotions. But when my kids saw it, they too were like, that's it. Enough. We're going out here and we're protesting and we're marching. When the first marches started happening in D.C., you know, there were some looting and there were some cases of fires and those kinds of things. And then we did watch when the president had peaceful protesters pepper sprayed and, you know, tear gas and all that. My kids wanted to be there. But I, as a mother, I'm like, okay, it's one of me, it's three of them. I can't do that. I can't bring them to a situation in which I feel like that they're going to be in danger. So I waited a couple of days for things to kind of calm down a little bit. And then, you know, we were able to find a protest that was entitled a peaceful protest. And that made me feel better. I mean, I can go down there and be tear gassed, but I just don't want my kids to have to go through that.
I mean, completely understandable. Have you been in touch with the other Potomac housewives in these recent weeks?
Yes. Robin, of course, Candace, Wendy, Ashley. Yes. I mean, you know, Wendy already is. Oh, have you guys met Wendy yet?
No, not yet.
Wendy's great. You'll love her. But, you know, one of her jobs, you know, she's going to tell you she got about 14 jobs. But one of her jobs is that she is a commentator for Fox News. This is her lane. You know, she's fighting the good fight and has been for a while. You know, Candace lets everybody know that, you know, she's got her fist in the air and she's ready to be as vocal as she can possibly be. But again, this isn't anything new for Black people. Were we saddened? Were we hurt when we all saw George Floyd murdered? Absolutely. But we weren't shocked. None of us were shocked, which is even more upsetting.
Yeah.
So now that we have all races standing behind us, fighting with us, it's a different ballgame. Because we know at this point, we can really, really invoke some change.
You know, you were speaking earlier about how your daughters recognize, you know, that you have a voice, you have this platform, you know, as the daughter of a civil rights leader, what was it like for you to grow up with a parent in the public eye?
I'm going to be honest. Growing up, my dad would talk about racism and inequality and, you know, and hoping that this world would change and we would see a brighter day. I took it for granted. I thought that everybody's parents were doing what my dad was doing. You know, I got it, but I didn't really appreciate it like I do now. You know, now that I am a parent and I have these kids to raise and instill core values in, I get it. And I'm so proud of my dad and the work that he's done. And, you know, he was always instilling nuggets in me as it relates to standing up for who you are, standing up for what you believe in. Don't ever let anyone take you for granted or marginalize you. So those kinds of things have always been instilled in me, and I totally appreciate it.
Well, now you and your partner, your parents, your daughters have two parents in the public eye. How do you help them navigate that?
It's funny because I think that they treat it the same way I did. I think they're just used to it. It's not a big deal. You know, their father has always been extremely well-known. And they have always been very well aware that he's always somebody that's in the Black community that is trying to make sure that the Black community gets everything that they're supposed to get with regards to housing, with regards to education, food, everything. So, you know, when they were very young, would always take them with him for rallies, for marches. So, you know, my kids are clear who their parents are and what we stand for, which makes me happy because there's no confusion. And they're right there with us. So there's never a moment where I'm like, hey, guys, we're going to go walk 100 blocks and protest. They will beat me to the car to get there. They're very proud of who they are and their Black skin. They're very proud of it.
What is or was the most important thing for you to teach them as Black children?
You know, as I've raised these girls to be strong and to be smart and to understand that, and I think every Black mother has said this to their child, in order for you to succeed in this country, unfortunately, you have to be twice as good, you have to be twice as fast, you have to be twice as smart as the white person standing next to you, or you cannot advance. Everyone, unfortunately, every Black mom has said that to their child because of how things have been set up in this country. It's never been fair for us. So in order for us to get the same job, you can't just be as qualified. You have to be more qualified. Hopefully one day that won't be the case. But right now, my kids know that they have to be better, smarter, stronger in order for them to make it in this country.
Wow. Yeah. I think that's important for people like me to hear. I appreciate you sharing that.
You know, I've heard from so many of my white friends, and, you know, they're so apologetic. They're like, Giselle, I'm so sorry. You know, that's nice that, you know, there are apologies, and it's nice that finally other races are seeing what we've been going through. I don't know what happened. Like, I don't know what everybody has missed. I don't, you know, we've had Rodney King. We've had Eric Garner. We've had Ahmaud Arbery. We've had Breonna Taylor. I mean, we had so many moments, but I'm grateful that we're here now. And, you know, this is not to make white people feel bad. This is to make all of us better. My mom always says, the truth will set you free. You know, now everyone knows the truth. And so hopefully we can all just do better and be better.
Well said. Aside from the amazing work you guys have been doing, going to the protests, having these conversations, what is the self-isolation quarantine time been like for you and your girls?
This has been the worst. Okay. So, you know, we started out with the kids doing their school via online. And, you know, thank God my kids are old enough that they're able to do that on their own. I don't have to help them because I don't, you know, I'm going to be honest. I don't understand the work that they do. Like, I don't understand the math. Mm-hmm. I don't understand, you know, half the stuff that they do. So I'm happy that they were able to do it on their own. School is now over. So, you know, we're just trying to find things that we can do to kind of like occupy our time. We always go on long walks or, you know, have a bunch of bikes here. We ride bikes. We kind of spend the mornings all together, and then the rest of the day, you know, we do our thing. But I am looking forward to coronavirus being over. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's enough.
You guys are spending, you know, as with all families right now, you guys are spending all your time together. Who of the family is annoying each other the most right now?
If you ask my kids, they're going to tell you me. Okay, uh-huh. I'm going to tell you that I am the worst. I'm so annoying. That's the favorite thing to say to me. I'm so annoying. You know, I'm going to be honest. When they were in school, when they were doing the online school, I would get lonely because I would be in the house and they'd be on their computers doing their work. And I was so lonely. So I would just bust into their rooms and start dancing and having fun. And they would be like, Mommy, you are annoying. So there's that. At this point, you know, all of my kids have gotten on my nerves. So I can't pick one. At this point, they're annoying me. So I think we're even.
How is your relationship with Jamal today?
We're good. We're great. Actually, we're leaving tomorrow to go to Atlanta and stay there for a while. Yeah, we've been doing good. I mean, it's been hard because we really weren't able to travel in the beginning of the pandemic. I mean, we've been traveling since. So he drove to see me one time from Atlanta and surprised me, which was really nice. I was able to go to Atlanta for his birthday. So we've been seeing each other, not as much, but, you know, what can we do?
Yeah.
He's out here. I say he's actually been calling me much more lately. Like, at first it was like 10 times a day. Now it's like 20 times a day. And I'm to the point where I'm like, look, you don't have anything to say. Just don't call. Just don't. We're just not going to be on the phone, just on the phone. Okay. So right now we're going to cut back on the calls.
Oh, that's interesting. I feel like most women are like, call me more.
No. Well, I mean, he calls me a lot and it's always FaceTime. I'm like, we can talk normal. Remember back in the day when everybody just talked normally on the phone, just audio? Let's get back to that.
How are your daughters adjusting to this new normal with you two back together?
They are. They're adjusting. At first they were like weirded out, confused, but now I think that they are used to it and they're fine. You know, at the end of the day, they just want me to be happy. And they're very protective of me, which makes me happy that they are really mama's girls and they just want to make sure that I'm happy. So they see that I am. So I think they're okay.
Are there any plans thus far for you guys to move in together?
No, only because, you know, my kids are now in high school. I have three kids in high school, and I don't want to change that situation. I don't, you know, I would never like move them. You know, high school is kind of important, so no. But we do see each other a lot, and, you know, let's be clear. At the end of the day, Giselle kind of likes her freedom and her independence. I like to see you when I want to see you, and when I don't want to see you, I don't want to see you. So it's perfect.
Yeah, yeah. I want to know how Every Hue Beauty is doing.
We're doing good. We, you know, we've had some issues with regards to our Corona hurt our manufacturer. We're working on that. So we've had some issues with regards to Corona and our manufacturers, the factory being shut down. And so we're trying to make it through, but, you know, it has affected the business in different ways. Like, I never would have thought that the issue would be making the product and our factory and all that. Like, you know, when something like a pandemic hit, I was just thinking that people would not be spending any money. They do. We just need to have the inventory and we need to figure out our manufacturing.
Yeah, that's a definite unforeseen cost of all this.
Yeah.
In some bright news, your bestie Robin and Juan officially got re-engaged in December. Did he come to you to like get the details or to ask you to pick the ring, anything like that?
Let me tell you, I was all up in it. Okay, there was nothing that was going to stop me from being all up in that whole mix. You know, Robin is really like a sister to me, and I just want to see her happy, and I couldn't help it. I was just so excited. So I was, you know, yes, Juan and I collaborated.
Which do you prefer, the engagement ring she now has or the tattoos?
The ring. Yes.
Okay.
I don't think I was a fan. I was never a fan of the tattoo. But yeah, I'm happy that a ring is now covering the tattoo.
And lastly, you touched on it a bit, but what can you tell us about the new housewife, Wendy?
I really like Wendy. You know, Wendy's a smart woman and she is fun. You know, I always love a smart woman. I can't stand when you just like can't really conversate and touch on several issues. And Wendy is definitely that. She has a whole lot of substance, but there's a whole nother side to Wendy, and Wendy likes to turn up. Wendy likes to have fun. She's amazing. She's a good addition to the group. And Wendy's greedy. You know, I love a greedy girl. So when we go to a restaurant, Wendy likes to order like five things. And I'm like, what are you doing? She will eat it all. So if a girl likes to eat and likes to turn up, you're my kind of girl.
Amazing. I can't wait to meet her. I know the fans can't wait to meet her. And we just can't wait to see all you ladies on our TV every week.
Yes. You know, it was really sad when they pushed us back. But you know what? With everything that's happened, I'm happy. I think Black Lives Matter would have taken over watching Potomac. So I'm happy.
Yeah. Thank you so much for doing this phone call. I so appreciate it.
You are welcome. It's good to chat with you.
Bye.
Below Deck Med?
Yes.
Okay, we got the first night out.
Yes, which it actually was not as dramatic as I thought it would be. Like, just given how tense things were between Hannah and Lara, I really thought we were going to see some sort of showdown.
I know. I think just based on maybe the misbehavior of so many of the people on the most recent season of Below Deck, I did expect this first night out to just something was going to go left, but it really didn't. It was pretty tame, all things considered.
You know what would be an excellent show is if Riley from Below Deck was the one in charge of Lara. Because I think she'd be getting a taste of her own medicine, first of all. But secondly, I can't imagine how Riley would handle that. Like, Hannah has been, not perfect, of course, but, like, kind of a saint in terms of, like, a lot of self-control, I feel.
Yeah. I mean, a lot more than I think most people would have in her situation with Lara, because she's pretty insufferable. That's funny that you bring up Riley, because now that has the wheels turning in my brain. And I'm like, imagine Riley in Malia's position dealing with, like, what Pete has been saying about Sweetheart and all of that. Like, Riley would be probably throwing people overboard at this point.
Ugh, we need to cast our own below deck med crossover.
Right. Oh my God. Yes, absolutely. Well, so it turns out that Lara will no longer be doing this job.
I have to say, I'm really upset, because even though I think she's infuriating, it's the kind of infuriating I like to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just weird that after a night of drinking, like, what was going through her mind that she just got up in the middle of the night and was like, I'm going to sneak off this boat. And by the way, where did she go?
Where's Lara?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I don't know. I just saw you come up with that. Maybe you guys were talking.
I haven't seen her.
So I have a theory that whatever, I don't know when she made the decision, but she got up early. I think she went and talked to production and she was like, I'm not doing this. I don't want to do this. And they were probably like, okay, you've been here for 20 minutes. Like, calm down. Can you please just try to work this out a little bit? Because it's also, she's quitting the day of a charter,
yeah,
which is going to leave her team really down a person when they absolutely need it. So I guess that she just like went, maybe talked to production. What I was also confused about is when she came back, and Captain Sandy was like, can you come here? And she was like, no, can you come here? Is she like legally not allowed back on the boat or something?
I think if a captain invites you, you can come back on for sure. But also, I think it was more like a stance. Like maybe she felt like, if I get on that boat, maybe they won't let me off.
Right. Well, I was thinking back to, you know, previous seasons when someone has left. I do feel like they've gone and packed their own bags. Like, it was just weird to think that somebody else was packing up her stuff. But maybe she just, like, didn't want to deal with the fallout and, like, having to see Hannah again or whatever. But I do agree with your point that I wish she had maybe stayed for a few more episodes and like stirred up a few more things during this charter, and then there was like a big dramatic exit. But yeah, I definitely think we could have seen a little bit more from Lara.
Yeah.
We also have an interview with her on BravoTV.com right now talking about her experience. So if you guys didn't feel like you got enough Lara, check it out on BravoTV.com.
I'm sure she has glowing reviews of Hannah.
I know, I can't wait. I actually haven't read it yet, so I'm really excited to check it out. I just have to say, too, Chef Kiko's food seems so, so good.
I am surprised that he seems to make great food and is nice. What? That's so unusual for a chef, right?
Right. I feel like, yes. I think the personality, usually when you're a good chef, is not as good as your food. And so, you know, so it is kind of rare to see someone who's so bubbly and energetic and smiley, and he's just so excited, he loves what he's doing, and he's putting together these amazing meals. It doesn't always work that way, personality-wise. But yeah, I mean, the tapas thing that he put together, everything sounded so good. And that's one of my favorite styles of meal, where it's not just like, you know, one plate of food, but it's like all sorts of different things that you can eat. Oh, it just looks so amazing. Also, can I just say that these children being on the boat is giving me anxiety.
All crew, does anyone know how to build a crib?
I don't understand why you want your kids with you on a yacht, because first of all, I feel like, well, I guess they do have a nanny with them, but I feel like my anxiety would be an overdrive. Like, where are they at all times? You know, it's just dangerous in general. And, you know, why not relax without the kids?
Right. Well, it's nerve-wracking for the family, the charter guests themselves. And then it's nerve-wracking for the crew, because even Hannah is like, oh, I need to make sure we check on the kids. But she's down Stu right now. So she's already having trouble getting everything done she needs to get done. And now you have to worry about these kids. And if they're running on the deck without, you know, floaties on or whatever, I'm just like, oh my God, I'm like, children, too much.
Too much.
Also, I have to say that I'm always interested to see these boat romances develop early on in the season and try to figure out where they go. I think we have one going between Jess and Rob, which I'm excited about because I like them both.
Seeing her read adds to the attraction. Like absorbing knowledge, you know, like it's more than just a surface thing.
I don't usually read fiction.
And seeing her in a bikini, it's f***ing delicious.
But I don't know where it's going to go. I don't think it's going to end well if something happens with them.
Do you know something? I mean, why would you just guess that?
I don't know. It's just because, like, I don't know. I feel like she is, like, too cool and wild for Rob. I don't know. There's something that I feel like they're going to hook up, but then there's going to be something else that happens. I don't know. I just don't have a good feeling. I don't have a good feeling.
It's very specific prediction.
No, I don't know. I mean, I like them and I hope that they hook up because they're both hot. But I don't know. I just, you know, these boat romances, they never end well. We've learned this from Below Deck Med. Look at Aisha and Jack, who, you know, seem to have it all at the end of the season. And then we find out he just full on ghosted her. And now he has a baby. Justice for Aisha. I mean, I was really bummed out. I thought they were so cute together, but you know.
But you know what? That's just, isn't that how it always goes? It's like you meet a guy, you fall in love, and then, oh, he has a baby.
A baby. It's true. I mean, I don't know. But yeah, I do also just hope that they get a replacement in soon for Laura. And it sounds like someone we know is coming back. So that's something.
I'm excited.
And see, this could throw a whole wrench in my boat romance theory. If this other person's coming back and she's hot, like what if this causes some trouble between Jess and Rob? I don't know. Unpredictable, I tell you.
That's the life of the sea.
Okay, should we do Rose and Thorn?
Yes.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
Okay, what was your rose?
So my rose was that I, you know, have really been able to interview a lot of people from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills lately. And one of those people was Eileen Davidson. And that episode is already up. So go listen. We talk about just all of my favorite Beverly Hills moments. And I don't know, I just was re-listening to the interview today and loved it so much. So go listen.
Oh, yes, I love Eileen.
What was your rose?
Okay, so I have two. And the first comes from Below Deck Med. And it was Hannah comparing Laura's leaving to taking ecstasy.
Having Laura leaving is kind of like taking ecstasy. You have a really high high, but the come down's going to be bad.
It's so high and you're so excited at first because she was just driving her nuts. So she was like, oh my God, I'm free of this drama. But then the come down is like, oh my God, we have a new charter starting and I'm down a stew. So what am I going to do? I just thought that was so funny. And my second rose, also kind of drug related. Yeah.
Is it the blunt?
Yes. My second rose is from Married to Medicine LA. And it's Dr. Imani's story about when she was in college, how they spelled out, what was it, like Xavier U or something?
Yeah.
With 21 blunts. And the picture got picked up by their school newspaper or whatever. And it became this whole thing. I just thought that was so hilarious. And so one of those things that happens to you in college.
I do have a lot of fond memories of being Xavier. Me and my boyfriend at the time and like a bunch of his friends, we rolled 21 blunts. We spelled out Xavier.
Here's a shirt.
And took a picture and then it ended up in the school newspaper. But then like they were like, oh, and so like it was.
No idea why, but definitely thought of you in that moment.
Listen, 21 blunts is like in college, sure. Nowadays, I'm like, that is too much, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, what was your thorn?
I mean, I think we've already touched on it, but anytime vaginal discharge is mentioned, I'm not a fan.
Do you have any questions as regards to your body? Questions about like vaginal discharge?
It's just a recurring thorn in your life.
I also just think we could like, we just need to rebrand that phrase.
Right. Is there something else we can call it?
Like,
I don't know. I was thinking like juice, like smoothie, like, and then I'm like, oh, nope. Nope, nope. If anyone has recommendations for how to rebrand vaginal discharge, please let us know.
Yes, tweet us. What's your thorn?
So my thorn is from Married to Medicine LA, and obviously with everything that Dr. Imani is going through with her divorce, you know, that would be my bigger thorn. But the smaller part of that thorn is something that Jasmine has brought up a few times, and it's that Phil, Dr. Imani's husband, seems to not have the smoothness and the sensuality that an R&B singer should have. And it's really obvious in the calls that he's had with her that we've seen on the show. Like, there is just something about, if you are a singer like that, you got to bring that into your personal life. And maybe that's what drew her to him in the beginning. I don't know, but I'm not seeing it. And then now we know where we landed on that one. So
yeah. I think anytime someone describes their partner is not overtly sexual, it's time to just get out.
Right,
just
right.
Get out.
Go. We also have another rose that we wanted to share with everyone, which is that a new Top Chef was crowned this week. So if you haven't watched, spoiler alert is on the way. We're going to tell you about the Top Chef finale. Drum roll, please. Congratulations to Chef Melissa King for winning Top Chef Season 17 All-Stars LA.
Congrats.
I feel like when you win an All-Stars season, like, that makes you just even better than every other winner ever.
Of course. It's an All-Star winner.
Yeah, you are like the supreme.
Yes. So we're going to have a special episode wrapping up the first season of Below Deck Sailing Yacht next week. And then we'll be back with an all-new episode Saturday.
Bye. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9.
And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me, kiss me.